Why don't you tell these gentlemen about some of the exciting things that have happened in the New York City subway system lately, Rico?
Well, we had a bomb scare in the Bronx yesterday. But it turned out to be a cantaloupe.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I am your host, Jason Bishop, and with me today, as always, is Sam Stepanenko.
I have my multipass. We're not talking about that movie, though.
No, we're not talking about that movie. Today, we're talking about The Taking of Pelham 123 from 1974 and The Taking of Pelham 123 from 2009. Yes, we know there is a 1998 version with Donnie Wahlberg and Edward James Olmos. It was made for television, so we'll be skipping over that movie this week.
Yeah, even though we do TV sometimes, this time we didn't feel it was necessary.
That's correct. Yeah, we're going to skip it. I don't want to hear it from you. We know it's out there. We've acknowledged it. So anybody who tells us it counts, well, we've told you multiple times. We don't do TV. And some days, like weeks, we do have lives outside of this. We do have paying jobs. And trying to get three of the movies in can be sometimes difficult. So we're going to do the two big screen versions of the film. Trish, unfortunately, is away. She is out in London right now. We did try to record this before. We got about 20 or 30 minutes recorded, but ironically, her hotel room was right outside one of the train stations, and it was causing a lot of noise. And yeah. I called an audible. It was disrupting our conversation, trying to wait for them constantly to roll by. And they come a lot.
Yeah, and she was having horrible lag as well. She was missing half the conversation, unfortunately. So yeah, it was hard for her to participate anyhow.
So we tried to get her in on this on Skype, but it didn't work out. And we'll have to ride this train, but just the two of us today, yes, instead. Trying to take over this Pelham 123, as it were.
As it were.
Or do you want to be Mr. Green or Blue?
Well, you're Mr. Blue.
I'm Mr. Blue. So, all right. I'm Mr. Blue. You're Mr. Green. And she's away.
Yeah, she's away. Yeah.
She's Mrs. On another train.
Yes. Yeah. And we will share that she was on a train when she watched the first one.
Yes. She was on the train from Paris to London watching the original film. How apropos is that?
Yes. And how uncomfortable for anybody who doesn't get the context.
Well, it's not like the train was exploding or anything.
That's true.
But, you know, it's like watching alive when you're on a plane.
Yeah.
It's like,
it's a little, yeah.
Might make you a little uncomfortable. Yeah. And anybody else uncomfortable, it's like, okay, well, you're watching a subway heist happening on the subway while you're on the subway.
And taking notes.
And taking notes. Yeah, that didn't look suspicious at all. Hey, that's a good idea. Oh, that didn't work.
Yeah, and
I'm not sure the mustache will look good on me.
Exactly. Yes. Right. And she did say she might try to record something to add to this, but we'll see if we can squeeze it in.
Yeah, we'll try to get something in there, but yeah, like I said, I had to throw out the original recording and put us behind, but what are you going to do?
Yeah.
It's been a while since we had any real major screw-ups on the show, so I don't know, behind the curtain of Invasion of the Remake.
Yes. It's not as easy as it sounds.
Not always, no. All right, so yeah, like I said, we're going to be talking about The Taking of Pelham 123. I had seen the remake before, didn't really remember too much about it, and this was the first time I'd actually gotten to watch the original film, and I really liked the original film. I liked it more than the remake.
As we do. I mean, I have seen the original, and that was the only one I had seen. I hadn't seen the remake yet, so mm-hmm. I think that's part of why I enjoyed the remake a little bit more maybe than you did, because I didn't have any preconceptions of it, so I was able to sort of see it as a different movie again. Whereas with the original, I was familiar with it and kind of saw it with, lack of a better way of putting it, tired eyes. And I always find 70s films to be a little bit draggy, even though it's shorter. But I still enjoy it. Don't get me wrong. And I still think it's a better...
It's shorter by 2 minutes.
It's still shorter.
Those 2 minutes really count.
I thought it was more short than that, but regardless, it is still shorter. I'm still not wrong.
No, you're still not wrong.
You got to win your arguments where you can. But yeah, I've always found the pacing of 70s movies to be a little bit draggy to me. Still love the story and still think that you're right. I think it's the superior film. But for sheer entertainment value, I did find the remake a little more entertaining.
Yeah. I don't know. For me, I don't like villainous John Travolta very much. Like, it took me half the movie to settle into him as he started relating with Denzel Washington, and they started dragging each other's stories out, and then I started getting into him a little bit, but he didn't seem to match the character that he was portraying.
Well, when we first recorded this, I said that he does malice very well, and he does, but you also made a good point that when he moves from that malice to nuts... That's where we lose him, because he does do malice really well.
I mean, they've switched from the original film where it's a heist split four ways of $1 million.
It's calculated.
Yeah. They've changed it somewhat because $1 million is a bit ridiculous. They moved it to $10 million. Okay, that's less ridiculous.
Yes.
But it is seed money to make a whole lot more money in the stock market.
Yes.
And he turns that instantly into $300 million. So you get an idea. This guy was a white-collar criminal who got caught and put in jail. So when he turns up in a leather jacket acting badass with his neck tattoo, and I'm like, yes, because we see a lot of accountants with neck tattoos.
Yeah, and that's where it sort of stretches that suspension of belief that we talk about all the time.
Yeah.
Or suspension of disbelief. And... I mean, you could sort of write off some of that to the fact that he had spent 5 years in prison, but it would have been a minimum security white-collar prison, right? He wouldn't have been in prison with hardened murderers and burglars and like, hardened criminals. So that doesn't make a lot of logical sense.
Yeah, whereas you got in the original film with Robert Shaw playing the same role as Mr. Blue instead of Ryder, and... He comes off very subdued. He actually does come off like a white-collar criminal in a lot of ways. Very calm and calculating. But he's a former merc, a veteran of war.
Yeah, yeah. He's about precision.
He really is. And he is willing to die at this point. I think he's just bored or has no direction in his life. And this is just something to occupy his time, really. I don't even think he cares about the money too much, because when he's caught... He kind of gives up some information, and he's caught, and he just third rails fries himself.
Yes.
Spoiler.
Yeah. As usual, if you haven't seen it and you don't want spoilers, you should be watching them before you listen.
Yeah, it's an old movie now, you had a shot.
Yes. Yeah, and if you listen to the show, you know that we do talk about them in detail.
Yeah, now that changes Garber, the main character played by Walter Matthau and Denzel Washington, which I was happy that they changed his first name to Walter for Denzel.
Yes.
It's a nice nod to Walter Matthau. But in the original film, Garber never meets Mr. Blue. I don't think they meet face to face. Oh, they do right at the end.
Right at the end, yes.
The end, where he does wind up going back. They're sent on this merry little chase at the end where he does leave the controlling station, and they're trying to get ahead of them, realizing, wait, they got off at this place and they had to track back. So
yes.
They actually do meet at the end. Yeah.
They do. And very similar to the way they do in the remake, but the remake really does change it and puts a lot on Garber.
It's a Denzel Washington-led film, a little less ensemble.
Yeah.
They try to give him some action sequences, despite him putting on all that extra weight for the part.
Yeah, and it really was unnecessary.
I didn't understand why he did that either.
No. Well, yeah, putting on the weight or the
action scene. Just make him look average.
Yeah. Right? I mean, he's a desk jockey, and that makes sense.
Yeah.
Right? But in order for them to have... change that end scene so substantially to no real purpose aside from putting more guilt on this character who's already under investigation for taking bribes.
Yeah. It's actually a pretty interesting backstory, yeah. Something Lieutenant Garber in the original film didn't yeah. have, because he was actual transit authority, where this guy was just a controller in the remake.
Who had been demoted because he was accused of taking bribes.
Yeah, he was higher up. He had been sent to Japan, which was a nod to the original film, where the Japanese had come to look at the New York trains.
Yeah.
I mean, Walter Matthau was taking him through, giving him a tour and whatnot. So this was a bit of a nod, throwback to that, and a nice change while still being similar.
Yes.
And keeping the characters similar.
Yeah.
So he had gone to Japan to look at the trains, and there was two competing bids for New York to buy trains from either the Canadian manufacturer, Yay Canada, yeah. or the Japanese. Now, the character himself had already chosen the Japanese ones, but they bribed him as well. And he's like, well, I was already going to pick you anyway. I'll take your money.
Yeah.
And he was going to use that money for good by putting his kids through college.
But he still took the money.
Yeah. And he denies it and denies it and denies it. But that is part of what makes the changes. The remake is there's a little more personal interconnection between Ryder, Travolta, and Denzel Washington as they're dragging each other's stories out, because there's a weird little bond. And yeah. once Travolta's made that bond, he won't really talk to anybody else.
Oh, no, there's a great bit there where they bring in the hostage negotiator, and he ends up ultimately killing somebody. Mm-hmm. To make his point that he's only talking to Garber and nobody else.
Yeah, because at that point there's already been a bond, and I think Travolta realizes he can manipulate him a little bit.
Yes.
Or at least, I mean, the way Travolta manipulates anybody in this movie is through threats of violence.
Yes.
And that's not something Mr. Blue would do. He would just keep to the schedule, and I'm not going to give any concessions. Well, he does give one, and Travolta gives none.
Yes.
So...
Yeah, Travolta's version of the character is definitely a lot more intense.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you can tell that his character is a smart man, much like Mr. Blue in the original. His character's name is Ryder. It's obviously a pseudonym that he picks from being on the train. There's even that funny, it's almost funny, not quite funny, but almost funny moment. He says, no, it's Ryder with a Y, right? But, yeah, he just, in typical Travolta fashion, he takes what could have been a really interesting character and takes it just that one step over the top, or in this case, probably three or four. Because early in the movie, I really enjoyed him because he had, like I said, we talked about, he was doing the menace, which works really well when he plays it down. Mm-hmm. But then when he goes into that face-off role where he goes over the top and he's playing Nicolas Cage, playing John Travolta, playing Nicolas Cage, mm-hmm. that's where he does lose it because he's just too far past that line between menace and madness.
I don't know. I think about every time I think about villain, I just get mad when I think of like that Punisher movie he was in.
Yes.
It was just so over the top nonsense. Yeah. But you know what? Now's the time for a trailer. We're going to run the original trailer for Walter Matthau 1974 version, and we'll be back to talk more about the taking of Pelham 123.
1:23 p.m. A crowded subway train starts its run from Pelham Station in the Bronx. 1:45 p.m. Four desperate, heavily armed men seize control of the train.
Open the door or I'll blow your head off.
Taking 17 people as hostages.
Your attention, please. Now then, you'll all remain seated. Anybody who tries to rise is going to get shot. I do hope I have made myself understood.
2:13 p.m. The city of New York is given 1 hour to come up with $1 million ransom.
You're out of your skull.
No all units stand by on a double.
What's up, Z?
A train's been hijacked.
Millions have read it. Now you can live it. The taking of Pelham 123.
There is no way you can get away with this. You are underground in a tunnel.
At precisely 3:13, we are going to begin executing the hostages.
Nothing will happen as long as you obey my orders.
New York City is held powerless in the grip of four ruthless men. From the mayor's office.
Don't tell me I don't want to know.
To police headquarters.
I've got about 50 men inside the tunnel, all wearing vests and armed with machine and submachine guns. We could fight the Third World War down there.
to the nerve center of the world's busiest subway system.
My only priority is saving the lives of these passengers.
Maybe an hour isn't enough time.
An hour is plenty of time.
We agree to pay the ransom. Repeat, we agreed to pay you the money. Now turn your clock off. The money has to be counted, stacked, tied, transported uptown. It just isn't physically possible.
You'd be surprised what's physically possible.
Pelham 123's in motion.
There's no driving no train.
How long does it take to get all that money together anyway?
Just not gonna make it.
We'll never make it. The passengers are dead ducks.
What the hell do you expect for that lousy 35 cents to live forever?
Walter Matthau, Robert Shaw. The most spectacular hijack in history. The taking of Pelham 123.
And that was The Taking of Pelham 123 from 1974. This was based on a novel by Jod Goody, who wrote Johnny Handsome, which I know Sam really likes.
Yes. Well, I can't say if I really like it. I remember liking it, but it's been a long time since I saw it. But it's an old Mickey Rourke film, and it's quite good. I remember it to be quite good.
Yeah. I don't know about the book, though.
Yeah.
The screenplay was by Peter Stone, who wrote Just Cause, and we did actually talk about him in episode 144 because he wrote the actually, it wasn't the remake. It was the original Charade, and I think he was credited for The Truth About Charlie, which we talked about in episode 144.
Excellent. Yes, we did.
Directed by Joseph Sargent, who directed Nightmares and Jaws the Revenge, and Trish would probably give that one the if
yes.
She was here, because that was infamously known as Jaws 4, and that was where, yes, the shark was taking revenge on a family, because that's what sharks do.
Yeah, and it's really what killed the franchise.
Yeah, it's awful. Starring Walter Matthau, who also was in episode 144, the original Charade.
Yes.
Robert Shaw plays Mr. Blue, who was in the original Jaws, the good one, as Quint.
Yes.
Everybody will remember him as Quint. It took me a minute in here because I'm like, oh,
God. He's so much younger.
The character is so much different, too, that it actually changes how you view him as an actor.
It is, yeah.
And it shows you the depth of, yeah, of their talent. There's actually a lot of great talent in this movie that have either won Oscars or were nominated for them or were just in some amazing films.
There's some absolute classics, yes.
Yeah. Hector Elizondo, he's that guy you saw in that thing that one time. He is in everything. And he plays Mr. Gray. And he was in Pretty Woman and Runaway Bride.
Because, well, romantic comedies and Jay, you know how that goes.
Yeah, so this is where I would, like, they suck and Trish would argue with me, but she can't. Earl Hindman was Mr. Brown, and Hindman you would probably remember most as Wilson from Home Improvement.
But you wouldn't recognize him.
You wouldn't recognize him at all. He doesn't say a lot, and much like Home Improvement, where he's hiding behind a fence, he is under glasses and a mustache and a big coat and glasses because everybody's in disguise, and they tried very much to make everybody look similar. So yeah, when it comes to describing everybody, he's got glasses, a mustache, a hat, and a coat.
Yeah.
And and glasses. Very, very nondescript, and it was a very clever way to disguise the heist people.
Because they all look kind of the same.
Exactly. James Broderick was Denny Doyle. He was in Dog Day Afternoon and is also the dad of
Mr. Matthew Broderick.
Mr. Matthew Broderick. Not our only senior from an acting family in this as well. Dick O'Neill was Cornell. He was in The Jerk and Wolfen, and we may remake one of those, if not both of those, someday. Lee Wallace was the mayor, and it is a role he's very familiar with because you probably saw him playing the mayor in Batman.
He seems to be sort of suited for that role.
He does. In this one, he's like sick and clearly an incompetent type of mayor. The deputy mayor is very much on top of everything and trying to guide him in a way. And it seems very familiar, just on a higher scale these days.
It really does, yes.
He's very pre-Trump. Tom Petty was not Petty, but P-E-D-I, was Kaz Dulowitz, and he was in The Naked City. Beatrice Wind was Mrs. Jenkins, one of the train riders. Jerry Stiller was Lieutenant Rico Patrone. We've actually talked about him not that long ago, episode 179.
Hairspray, both of them.
Yes, and also Jerry Stiller is the father of
Ben Stiller, who I don't think we have talked about yet.
No, we haven't, but I do have some Ben Stillers in the works.
Well, there's Heartbreak Kid is a remake. So
Secret Life of Walter Mitty.
Yes, which highly recommend watching his version of it just now because I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and I think there's a couple more on that list as well as things that were for us to compare. Mm-hmm. So look forward to some Ben Stiller stuff down the road at some point. Nathan George was Patrolman James, and we talked about him in the improbable episode 54.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and I do not know what I was thinking when I suggested that. To this day, I still cringe. I'm like, oh, why did I do that? And I do know why I did it, because you had never seen it. And it was, and I'm like, you're missing out. Let's try it and see what happens. And what happened was not good. Well, what Jay did was good, but there's no way you can remake that movie.
No. So when I tried to remake it, I just made it worse.
Like, just rolled with it.
I can't make it better, but I could certainly make it worse. So I had a lot of fun with it. If nothing else, listen to the end of that episode, because I had a blast on that one. And Rudy Bond was the police commissioner, and may have been one of the most accomplished actors in this entire roster of accomplished actors. And he was in things like Godfather and on the Waterfront, and it just goes on and on. Like, his resume, it's a great cast of actors in this movie.
It really is, and the performances are solid all the way through.
It is. IMDb gives this a 7.7 out of 10,
and I don't think they're off the mark.
Okay, well, what do you think Rotten Tomatoes is, the critics gave it?
I'm gonna say about 63%.
Huh. Okay, what do you think the audience gave it?
79%.
Okay, so critic score, currently it sits on Rotten Tomatoes at 100%.
Well, I was not going in the right direction, was I?
No, I was a little shocked. That might be our first 100% on this show.
Yeah.
And the audience gave it a strong 88%.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that it's a 100% movie, but 88% I would go with.
Yeah, I did really enjoy it. Yeah. I mean, now that I've seen the Denzel a couple of times, I don't think I'd care to watch it again. Like, it was good. It was entertaining, but I'd certainly revisit the 74 again. There's just something about it where everything kind of worked. Not everything worked, because some of it feels very dated. There's some racist undertones that they pulled from the novel that is uncomfortable in a modern society. There is use of the N-word.
Yes, very much.
There's sexism, although I like how they use it. There's like one guy in the control room who's very hard-nosed. He's like willing to like sacrifice them all. And just not give these into any of these guys, that whole not giving it to terrorism. And the mayor's in a tough place, too. It's like, well, 17 guaranteed votes if you save them.
Yeah.
pay up the $1 million, which at one point he actually says they can have the car because we don't have $1 million.
Yeah.
Which even I rolled my eyes. I'm like, you didn't have $1 million in the coffers in 1974, but maybe not. I don't know what the
economy of New York was in the 1970s. And that's something that we obviously can't reference, but or don't have a frame of reference for that.
No, I was 1 year old.
Yeah. I was not old enough to care about the finances in New York City. I wasn't one, but I was not old enough.
Yeah. I wasn't old enough, nor was I close enough being in another country.
Yeah.
So I can't comment on what that was, but I mean, clearly an incompetent mayor who's being pushed by the deputy mayor, who's mainly doing everything. And there's little shadows of that with Gandolfini in the remake. He seems far more competent,
but he doesn't care anymore.
He's apathetic.
Yeah.
And so his deputy mayor has to kind of be his Jiminy Cricket.
Yeah.
You know? Cause
yeah, he's retiring. He's not running for re-election this time.
Yeah.
And I liked the way they did that. And I liked the way, I mean, casting Gandolfini as the mayor of New York was brilliant. Mm-hmm. And the fact that kind of made him an everyman, where he's riding the subway when this happens.
Yeah, with the people.
Yeah.
And it can get them there quicker, but he's, again, somewhat concerned about the votes, because deputy mayor is like, skip all the stops, and the guys on the train with him were like, No, that's five. Like, I need to get, I'm going to miss five stops. Like,
yeah.
So he's like, no, no, we're going to make every stop. So he's not quite taking the threat that seriously as of yet. Because there's, by that point, the 1 hour clock is taking away at getting the 10 million in the remake was 1 million in the original film. Yeah.
I think Gandolfini's mayor also genuinely cares about the people of New York. He just doesn't care about the job anymore.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's part of it, too. Because you get that sense that he actually does give a shit about the people versus the mayor, where he does see them as playing pieces on a board, essentially. Right. So, yeah, it's a very different character. And there's only one sour note in the remake for me at the end with the mayor, where
where they bring up his philandering?
Well, no, the philandering, you know, where he's basically tells Garber that he doesn't have to worry about the bribery charges anymore.
Oh, yes. Right. Well, he did do pretty good solid. But
he did, but it also kind of undermines the character a little bit to me.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, it does sound like the mayor himself had some shady stuff as well. Like everybody kind of did something in that movie.
Yes.
It was to a point where it's like, maybe you should have pulled back a little bit.
Yeah.
Some people should have just been average people.
Yeah. But are there no good people on this planet?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, it makes New Yorkers not look very good.
That's exactly it. And that was part of what I was enjoying about Gandolfini's mayor is he was a good guy who'd made a mistake. He slept around on his wife. That's not criminal.
Yeah, right? Which I think was in the book.
Yeah.
And instead they wound up making the mayor just really ill during the movie.
And incompetent.
And incompetent instead in the original film.
Yeah. But like I said, that's a mistake. And but that's also his personal life, right? Mm-hmm. But he still seemed to take his job as the mayor very seriously. And then for that to sort of come through, it just felt a little off to me. Like it didn't quite fit the character.
No, I agree. I wanted to go back to something that other controller who was being sexist and whatnot. And there were assumptions being made because there was an off-duty cop actually on the train in the 74.
Yes.
Actually, it was in the remake too, but he gets taken off the board pretty quickly.
Yes, he does, yeah.
Whereas this one kind of guy makes it to the end of the movie. But there's this running... It's a gag that takes a long time to pay off.
Yes.
Like, it's set up really early in the movie, and it takes forever to pay off, where they're like, well, it could be a man or a woman, and then the dude being the sexist, racist asshole, he's like, well, what? We're screwed if it's a woman.
Yeah, yeah.
And whatever. So there's this constant, well, it could be a woman if somebody says man and vice versa. And there's a lot of that going on in the movie. It's not all the time, but they keep reminding you. So when Garber gets to the end and the undercover cop had been injured fighting Mr. Blue and he's kind of face down and it is a guy, but he's got long hair undercover, and so he walks by, he's like, you'll be okay, ma'am.
Yes.
And I'm like, holy shit, that took a long time to pay off. And I'm not sure it was as funny as you think it was, but I kind of enjoyed that they tried so damn hard to get that joke to land.
Yeah, they tried really hard. And when you hear it in Walter Matthau's voice, it just sounds funnier.
Yeah.
Like it just, I'm like hearing it and I'm like, okay, there's a little chuckle there.
Yeah.
And I do like the way they turn that on its ear in the remake, mm-hmm. because you had the conductor, mm-hmm. who was at the beginning of the movie, and he actually empowers her, mm-hmm. which was really interesting, because he is not that he wants to hurt these people. I mean, he actually sort of forces this conductor to stand up and do her job.
Yeah.
Right, because she's terrified, and then he gives her that confidence, saying, okay, get these people off the train, right?
Yeah, do what you're trained to do.
Do what you're trained to do. Yeah. And she does, and then you can see that there's sort of like, there's that moment where she's like, yes, this is my job. Mm-hmm. Right? And she gets that confidence back that the incident had taken away from her.
Yeah. Now, this is something that happens in both movies, Mr. Blue and Ryder. Once they've got the train, it's much easier to control one car full of people and maneuver that car rather than a whole train's worth. So they stop the car, pull that other car away, and allow the rest of the passengers on the rest of the train to leave, and that's what the conductor is meant to do, is get them all to safety. So there is concern, somewhat. It's like, hey, we're not monsters. I don't want to hurt all these people. In fact, you can, in the original movie, you get a sense that Mr. Blue has already told Mr. Green, who is a former driver as well, what do they call them, machine guys?
Motorman.
Yeah. That's what I was looking for, yeah. Motorman. He was a former motorman, so he knew the ins and outs and how to get these people on the train, the security checks, all that sort of thing. But he was assured nobody would get hurt. And you can see how uncomfortable he is with some of the threats of violence on this movie.
Yes. And you don't get that same sense in the remake, for sure.
No. Well, what was his name? Guzman?
Yeah, Luis Guzman.
Yeah, Luis Guzman played that similar role, where in the original movie, the former motorman makes it to the end of the film. Yeah. He's actually the only survivor of the heist.
Yeah, they kind of merged Guzman and the Elizondo characters with the, like, Guzman is a sort of combination of the motorman character and the Hector Elizondo character.
Yeah.
He's kind of aggressive, not to the extent that Elizondo character is. He is reprehensible. He's a misogynistic, prone to violence. Like, he's over the top mob guy.
Yeah, and he was. He had a mafia background.
Yeah.
And that was his background, which I kind of like that you get a sense of most of the characters, except for Mr. Brown, who doesn't say much. But he gets sniped with consequences, of course, because they are kind of carefree a little bit. You figure the Merc would have been a little more careful about that sort of thing, but they surrounded the car. One of the snipers got a little trigger happy and went for it.
That doesn't happen in the original, because he's the one who takes out Elizondo at the end.
Mr. Brown?
Mr. Brown gets sniped.
Mr. Brown gets sniped.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, no, Mr. Blue realizes what a loose cannon that Mr. Gray, Elizondo's character, is, and finally just has enough and goes pops someone.
Yeah.
Takes him off the board because he's too much of a risk to them as well as the other passengers.
Yes, exactly. And in the remake, the only sort of two characters you get a sense of are Guzman and Travolta's characters.
Yeah, which is, I was really surprised at how early Guzman was taken off the table for being the key role. So it's a bit of a surprise when it happens, especially if you have watched the 74 and then see that. It's a little weird because, I mean, he is the expert and they need him.
Yeah, until they turn it on its ear by bringing Garber in earlier than they did in the original, where they actually meet in person, because he then forces Garber to operate the train, so he didn't need Guzman anymore.
Yeah, and I liked how that was a vehicle to get Garber out of the office and down there earlier, because they spend a lot more time in the remake connecting to each character personally, at least between Travolta and Washington.
Well, and everybody, because the mayor shows up at the operation center. You have the John Turturro's character, who is wonderful in this movie.
Yeah, but
he's by far the best performance in the
movie. When it comes down to the characters, like, secrets and stuff, like, there's a connection between Ryder and Garber in the remake that doesn't quite happen in the original movie.
No, you get a better sense of the characters in the remake, even though it's not as strong a film. There's some things they do better.
Yeah. And I think they overwrite it a little bit, but it does work considering the professionals you're getting to deliver that.
Exactly. I mean, you get backstory on everybody, even our hostage negotiator, played by John Turturro. You get a little bit of his backstory, where he's talking about trying to teach Garber how to negotiate. And he tells a little bit of story about his last hostage situation. Mm-hmm. I'm having real trouble saying hostage today, by the way. So I'm not going to say it anymore.
I like how they pull a lot of stuff from the original movie and take a different angle on it.
Well, it does what we ask remakes to do.
Yeah.
Is it takes that original story and then does something new with it so that you can still recognize the original story, but still makes it its own story.
Yeah, you get a sense of Matthau is a little more in control.
Yes.
Washington's been put in this position. He's the first one to make contact, and there's nobody really else there until Turturro comes. They do try to take him over. They even try to send him home.
Yes.
And it almost cost somebody their life.
Well, it did cost somebody
their life. It did, actually.
And that was a nice throwback to the original as well.
Yeah, the original, the engineer of the actual train that they took over is the first one to go. I like how Travolta said, you were always going to be the first one.
Yes. And, the motorman in the original was also the first to go.
Yeah.
Right, so it was a nice throwback, but they used it to greater effect, I think, in the remake. Mm-hmm. Because in the original, he's just gone. He dies, and that's the motivation for the hard ass in the control room that you were referring to earlier, is that he's mad because they killed a motorman.
Yeah.
Right? He killed his friend.
He killed one of ours.
You killed my friend.
Yeah.
And to him, nothing else matters. Right?
Yeah,
and it shows a real narrow or sort of tunnel vision of this particular character.
He was willing to sacrifice everybody on the train. It's like, don't give him anything. Don't make any concessions for these terrorists. I mean, they're not terrorists, but they're just thieves.
They are just thieves, but they are committing a terrorist act.
Yes, absolutely. Using terrorism for monetary gain, for sure.
Yeah. And I mean, it's interesting that when you think about it, because it does, this movie, the original shows a number of different personalities without giving you any sort of characters, mm-hmm. right? Because you have this character who, there's real people out there who are going to be like that, right? Mm-hmm. Where, no, you know what? You killed my friend and all I care about is vengeance now. I want to get them back.
Yeah, he's constantly yelling at Mathau. Thankfully, Mathau's the one making contact.
Yes, yeah. And Mathau's calm and cool-headed, yeah. And he's thinking about the big picture.
Yeah.
Right? And so, and that was...
It's weird really how you have to thought. Sell this. Like, yeah. Like, even the deputy mayor was having to sell it to the mayor. It's like, hey, pay them. Well, we don't have $1 million. We just give them the train. Yeah. Well, look at it this way. 17 guaranteed votes.
And probably more because...
because it's going to look good in the press.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Right. And I like the way they handle the money. And they don't have to sell them, this mayor, on paying them out. He's, mm-hmm. again, that's sort of what I liked about Gandolfini's mayor, is he was a true mayor mm-hmm. for the most part. But the way they explain the money, how they can get it out of the repository as long as it's $10 million or less without certain security processes, additional security processes. And that's your first clue that Ryder knows something about the finance world.
Yeah, right? That's where I had a problem with him, because you get a feeling this is a white-collar criminal yeah. and he doesn't come off that
yeah.
way. So it was a little weird, yeah. but the fact that they don't go in with disguises shows that they're not as professional as that yeah. team in the original film. And I kind of missed it a little bit.
I did too. I was actually rather disappointed. Yeah. I think it would have been nice to see those tattoos to be fake
yeah.
and have that mustache come off and have him be look like the white-collar criminal that
yeah.
he was.
Because, I mean, it's 2009. Yeah. There had been cameras on those trains yeah. at that point.
Yes.
74, probably not. But yeah. 2009, abso-fucking-lutely, they yeah. have cameras on those trains.
Exactly.
So how were they going to get away with their money? Well, like, they would literally had to gone into hiding in underground for the rest of their lives.
They would have. And I love and that's one thing I really liked about the original, or the remake, I should say, that I did like, was the way they incorporated modern technology, mm-hmm. where they cut off all of the signals to the cameras, and they've blocked the Wi-Fi signal, but somehow there's that one signal that's getting through because of where it is in the train, that laptop that's sitting on the ground. Mm-hmm. Some it's getting a signal because of where it is.
Well, no, they did some rewiring. Like, it was cut off. They chose that spot yeah. because it cut off the signal. It was kind of a dead zone.
Yes.
And Guzman, being the operator, knew where the switches were and how to yeah. cut things off, yeah. but they needed the Wi-Fi to do the research on who they were talking to, because we do yeah. see...
Oh, that's right, Travolta, and that laptop type.
And yeah. he looks up Garber.
Yeah, but then you have the passenger laptop who also...
Yeah, because he was making googly eyes with his girlfriend.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Poor guy lost his signal when she was taking her top off.
Yes, yeah. But then it comes back, and that plays into the story quite a bit.
Not as much as you might think. Like, it does give, because I guess she puts out the feed live.
Yeah, and that's where they start getting more information on these people who are yeah, doing, who are committing the crime.
It's the rest of it's distraction, because then you get, do you love me?
Yeah, and that was unnecessary.
A lot of nonsense.
Could have been used better, yes.
Yeah, right? So this character, just give it a little more time, mind you, but it was completely unnecessary stuff. And it does feel a little weird as a laptop. I guess we didn't have smartphones yet, but in 2009 or
they weren't
at least
they
not
weren't in common usage like they are now.
Yeah,
yeah. What I meant was I like the idea they at least tried to bring yeah. that in.
It was very awkward,
but yeah, they didn't use it as well as they could have.
Yeah, but at least the one part made sense. The rest of it was just like,
yes.
Yeah. Well, now that it's open, we need to do something else with it.
Yeah,
got this open Wi-Fi signal, which something really irritated me right near the end of the movie. Like, the signal's open, do you love me, don't you, and then the battery died.
Yeah.
And then he comes back and talks to her again. I'm like, but the battery died.
Yes.
How did you get back onto your computer when the battery died?
I had an issue with that too.
I mean, there is some bad continuity in that remake.
Yeah, there is. Right.
But that was the worst.
Yeah.
I'll let you get the rest of our audience go find all the flaws, the continuity flaws in the movie, and there are numerous. But it's not like Pretty Woman numerous.
No. But there's a lot of them.
Yeah. Actually, the other big one was the operative when Washington – goes down to take the cash. Like, this is a, they're trying to get the cash in time. There's an accident. The car turns over. And with Guzman dead, Travolta realizes he needs another person to take that spot. That's why he wants Garber to come down and deliver the cash. Now, they stash a gun in one of the bags. And it's in a pocket. And it was, I think, a Walther PPK.
I don't know. I don't know about guns.
Well, it was a completely different gun he pulled out of the bag at the end of the movie.
Yes.
So they forgot what their own prop was.
Yes. But they didn't forget that it had the little zip tie on it.
Nope. They didn't forget about the zip tie. And none of that happens in the original movie.
No.
Like, Garber comes down near the end. It was the off-duty officer who winds up confronting the men. By that point, Mr. Blue had already taken out Gray for being an asshole. And I think the undercover guy guns down Brown.
Yes.
And Blue manages to subdue him. Doesn't kill him, but subdues him. And that's where the joke comes in. Garber comes in.
Yeah.
And he said some stuff that was pretty incriminating. And then he just steps on that third rail and fries himself.
Yeah. And that's probably, interestingly enough, that's the weakest scene in the movie for me, because his electrocution death was pretty hokey.
It was, but I didn't mind it, because they do set it up.
Like, yeah.
They do set up that...
The circumstances or the death, just the way it was performed.
He didn't care about the cash that much. Yeah. Like, he was very much about the operation. Yeah. I think it was just to keep him occupied, because he had no merc stuff to do.
Yeah. Yeah, no,
or he's getting too old to do the part, or
no,
whatever.
I'm not talking about the scene itself. Yeah. I'm talking about the way it looks.
I actually like it better. Yeah, well, okay, the way it looks is he starts smoking.
And yeah, that's what I meant. No, I love the story part of it.
Yeah.
and the way it's inserted in the movie,
the
works.
Visual's a little hokey.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at. Yes,
I'll give you that.
Yeah, but yeah, it's a far better, a far more fitting end to that character.
Yeah.
Right, and I would have liked to have seen something similar to that occur in the remake, but then, and instead of what did happen.
Yeah, it gets above ground. Now, he took that money, the $10 million that was split, and it wound up, I don't know, 2.5 or something. But he managed to turn that on the open market into $300 million pretty quickly.
Well, no, it was $2 million from his white-collar crime that had not been recovered that he uses as seed money. But he was affecting the market. The other money was bonus money for his crew. It had nothing to do with him. He didn't really care about that money.
Right, right.
Because he had just made $300 million.
Yeah, yeah. Right? So it was a big score for him. But so he's getting away. They find a secret tunnel under the Waldorf and use it to escape through the kitchen and out to the hotel. And they had the money delivered in normal luggage. So it doesn't look odd that they're coming into a hotel with luggage.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, that's all clever and stuff. And Garber's been let loose. He's out there and trying to get ahead of him and trying to figure out where he's going. And he sees Travolta get into a cab and chases him, originally on foot.
Yes.
And then finally had to hop into something. And then New York traffic forced Travolta to go walk the rest of the way, and that gives him a chance to get a line of sight. But boy, I hated that ending where the cops are converging at any moment, and Travolta's like, I'm not going back to jail. And he's like, don't you let them take me or shoot me. You do it. You do it.
Yeah. And he puts that onus on him.
It does.
Right. And it's just,
it's all like, do we have that kind of a personal relationship at this point?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm like,
this is a character who's never handled a gun.
Yeah.
He's not a police officer. It just, you're right. It felt like they were giving Denzel something action to do.
Yeah.
And I think that,
I mean, he had the drop on him. There was no real risk there. Would he have jumped? Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
I'm and like, I would could have loved you to have see shot him in a non-lethal
and
spot?
That's what I was thinking. I would have loved that Eddie Murphy moment from 48 Hours where he sort of pops him in the leg.
Yeah.
I would have loved to have seen something like that. It's like,
yeah. Yeah. It's like, well, there you go. I shot you.
Yeah.
And you're still going to jail, asshole.
Yeah. And I that's one of the tropes about modern action movies that I don't always enjoy, is how the bad guys almost always have to die.
Mm-hmm.
Right? What's wrong with catching them and sending them to prison? Or if you're going to do it like a death like that, do it like the original did, where it fits the story and makes more sense for the character.
I mean, I guess in some regards, New York State, I don't believe, has the death penalty. So with the amount of deaths he actually was responsible for, I don't know, maybe they thought that was, story-wise, that was on an equal level. Yeah. But if he feared jail more than death, then I would have probably wanted to give him jail, make him suffer.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I guess it does fit the character, because the whole movie he's manipulating Garber.
Yes.
Right? And that's just one final manipulation that he needed to do.
Yeah.
So
he's a very good manipulator.
He was a very good manipulator. And I guess it does make sense for the character. I just felt that it wasn't as effective to me.
Yeah. Okay, well, we've talked about that one quite a bit. Let's listen to the trailer for The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3 from 2009.
Okay, I'm going to need the R train to switch over to the express tracks at 34th Street.
Unlock the door. Do it now or I'll kill you.
Everybody else, this side, facing the window.
Control center calling Pelham 1-2-3. Why'd you stop 1-2-3? You're all green ahead.
Rail control center, do you read me?
Who is this?
This is a man who's going to give the city a run for the money.
Now, what is the price for New York City hostages this morning?
What do you think, a million a piece is too high?
No, I'm not a hostage negotiator. I'm a civil service employee.
Oh, I think you'll do just fine. Now, what time do you got on your watch?
2:13.
59 minutes, I'm going to start killing passengers.
You don't want innocent people dying, do you?
You tell me.
Life is simple now. You just have to do what I say.
Call the mayor now.
Somebody just hijacked Pelham 1-2-3.
You don't think this was fate, you and me?
You know, I'm just a guy. I'm just a guy on the other end of the mic.
I do like you, man. You may be the last friend I ever make.
How are you going to get the money here?
They're shutting down every intersection from here to Brooklyn.
The money's on the way.
Look out!
There was an accident.
Now somebody else has to die.
Those cops are going to be down that tunnel.
Got an easy shot, please advise.
Let him unload on me.
I want to make you a deal. I will trade you for all these passengers.
You don't have to do this.
They want me to take the money down to the tunnel.
You do what you have to do, but we need milk. So on your way home, I want you to bring a gallon.
I could get a half a gallon. I'll get a half a gallon.
You're just like me, Garber.
How do you use one of these?
5 seconds.
Okay.
The day was going to start.
Sorry.
I know exactly how it's going to start.
Two.
Yeah, but do you know how it's going to end?
One.
All right, that was Taking of Pelham 1-2-3 from 2009. Screenplay by Brian Helgeland, who's actually a really great screenwriter.
Yes.
He did A Knight's Tale, L.A. Confidential, Mystic River, Man on Fire, and we talked about him in episode 38.
I missed it.
That was Payback.
I can't believe I missed that.
Directed by the late Tony Scott, who also has a great resume behind him. Beverly Hills Cop 2, Top Gun, Days of Thunder, Man on Fire, and True Romance, among many. And his actually last movie was Unstoppable, another train movie.
Yes.
Starring Denzel Washington as Walter Garber. In this one, he's a normal operator we talked about before, so he wasn't a transit authority guy. But we did talk about Denzel once before in episode 105.
The remake of Magnificent Seven.
Correct. John Travolta is Ryder, the main bad guy in this movie. We've talked about him a couple of times. The first time was in episode 175.
That would be Carrie.
And then shortly after that, in episode 179.
Along with Jerry Stiller and Hairspray.
Absolutely. Luis Guzman was Phil Ramos. He was the motorman in this movie who, unlike the original film, does not survive at the end of the movie. I love how they set him up in the original movie. That version of the character was Mr. Green by Martin Balsam. And he's always got the sniffles or is sneezing and stuff. And they're looking for former motormen who've lost their job for various reasons. And they managed to trim down the list to about 9 suspects. And they go interviewing door to door at the end of the movie. And they're about to leave the motorman's apartment at the end of the movie. And just as he gives a sneeze, because he'd hit, he'd come to the door, he rushes and hides the money
in his oven.
In his oven, and there's one line just under the bed that he kicks under there. It's
a little gaggy, but fun.
A bit of gaggy sitcom-y a little bit, but it's pretty fun. And just as they're leaving, sneeze, and then Walter opens the door again. Walter Matthau opens that door again, and you just get this glare. Yeah. And I loved it.
It was kind of the gotcha.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So I liked it, but Luis Guzman didn't make it to the end of this movie.
No, he was a mashup of all of the secondary characters.
Yeah.
Because the other gunmen in the remake, you really don't see very much of them at all.
And Guzman's such a great actor, yeah. And I would have liked to have gotten a similar ending for him. That would have been kind of cool, but
I think it would have been a lot of fun, actually.
Yeah, I think that was a missed opportunity to take him off the table so quickly. Victor Gotchkak was Bashkin. I don't know how to pronounce his name, so I'm sure I butchered that. Robert Vataj was Emery. John Turturro, Barton Fink, Quiz Show, he's amazing. He was Lieutenant Caminetti, and he's the hostage negotiator in this movie that initially Ryder just won't talk to after making connection with Garber.
We haven't talked about him an awful lot, but I liked the way they portrayed him, because you kind of expected him to sort of be the dick cop, smarmy guy, right? I have to be in control. Mm-hmm. But he wasn't.
No, he's like,
really
okay.
Really helpful.
Yeah, he is. He realizes he can't control the situation. There's a connection that's being made, so he's going to have to coach Garber into doing this properly.
He's really likable.
Yeah, absolutely. Michael Rispoli was John Johnson, who you might have seen him in Kick-Ass. Ramon Rodriguez was Delgado. You've probably seen him most recently in Iron Fist and Defenders, and he was also had an ongoing role in The Wire as well. James Gandolfini was the mayor, obviously best known for Tony Soprano on The Sopranos.
Yes.
John Benjamin Hickey was the deputy mayor LaSalle, and you have also seen him regularly on The Good Wife, which Trish would say, yeah, he was in The Good Wife, I remember him. Everybody was in The fucking Good Wife.
Yeah.
and he was also in more recently in the Jessica Jones Netflix TV series. Alex Kolaszewski. Why has everybody got such hard names in this remake? He was George. And I don't even want to do this other guy, but he was also in The Good Wife.
There we go.
Because everybody's in The Good Wife. I'm not going to try. The guy who plays Wallace, you can look him up.
Yeah. And I mean, really, aside from sort of four or five key characters.
Most of those guys were passengers on the train. They got a few lines.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this one's tighter in that sense. Like the cast is tighter and there's less jumping around like with. The original is probably the only thing that they do better in this remake is they tighten up your locations. You have the operation center and the train, and that's pretty much all you have, aside from a few moments with the mayor where he's getting to the operation center.
Yeah.
And well, then there's at the end.
You do get a quick shot of Garber's wife as well
when they
go and investigate Garber, because there's a risk that they think Garber might be in on this.
There is, and I like that dynamic of it, but... Yeah, in the end, it's just they tighten it up in really well in some ways, and really I think the thing that most undermines this movie is Travolta's over the top performance.
Yeah,
I think if he'd have brought that down like three notches, it probably could be at least on par.
Yeah, sometimes it works when he does it, sometimes it doesn't. There are some, I think he was somewhere in the middle on this one, the way he presented himself, because I find. Like in Punisher, he's way over the top, and Broken Arrow, and there's all sorts of movies like that. Yeah. But this one, like, I thought he was over the top initially and then settles in the role, but...
And then went back over the top.
Yeah, he's so quick to anger, and that's when he gets over the top. Yeah. He doesn't come off near as cheesy as he does in some other movies.
But there's, it's not quite there.
No, right? No. And the audience didn't think so either. Critics gave this a 6.4 out of 10 on IMDb. And
which is still decent.
Decent, absolutely. What do you think? Take some guesses on the Rotten Tomatoes scores.
Critics, I'm going to go 48%.
Okay.
And I'm probably being generous.
Not far off.
And for the audience score, because it is entertaining, I'm going to go with 61%.
All right. Well, critics and audiences were really close in agreement on this one. We rarely see it this close. Critics gave it a 51%, so you were just under what's that one. And audiences gave it a 52%.
Oh, so I was a little under and then a little over. I was maybe being a little more generous because I did find it entertaining, if not good.
Well, apparently people thought it was half as entertaining as the original.
Yeah. Well, no, half as good as the original because, again, quality versus entertaining can be very different.
That's true.
Because I've seen some really terrible movies that are really entertaining because they're fun to make fun of, right? Mm-hmm. Or some are just fun rides. They're not good movies, but they're fun rides.
Yeah.
And I would put this movie in that category.
I have a Pacific Rim poster on my wall. Come on, man. We all know it's a bad movie, but it's sure fun to watch.
Yeah, exactly. And we all have those guilty pleasures like that.
Yeah. Right?
Hudson Hawk is one of those movies for me. It's not a good movie. Yeah. But it is a fun ride.
Yeah.
And this one's not as fun, but it falls into that category. It may not be as solid as the original, but it's still a good, fun watch if you're not comparing it.
I'll give them at least, like, there are some good performances in here, but sometimes...
Oh, Denzel never phones it in.
No, and Luis Guzman didn't get the kind of time to shine that he deserves because he's proven himself time and time again.
Yeah.
So I was a little puzzled with what they did with him.
Yeah, and then you've got James Gandolfini in one of his last roles.
Mm-hmm. And I got to say, he's always good in what he does.
Yes.
So I won't take it away from him. And his mare, at least... uncovers some thoughts based on his own shadiness, really, which I kind of like how he turns it around and he makes some assumptions about this guy. I guess they're talking about an ass model and he's like, hey, who's coking it up with an ass model
in Iceland?
Well, it's got to be a Wall Street guy.
Yeah,
you know, like
and then they start putting the pieces together and that's where they identify Travolta's real name and who he really is.
Yeah.
Right? And I mean, they do set you up right at the beginning because he starts talking about people as commodities.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So there's your first they give you clues that he's not just your average everyday criminal, but his performance kind of distracts you from that.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that's and we keep talking about how if he'd brought the menace, like there's a moment in the trailer there where he says something is like that. If he'd have held that keel all the way through the movie,
mm-hmm.
it would have been just. You would have felt really uncomfortable with him without feeling overwhelmed by him.
Yeah. Every time he started yelling, that's when I'm like, ah.
Yeah.
But when he took it down a notch, I'm like, oh, I like this. This is good.
Like you mentioned earlier when he says to the conductor or to the motorman, well, you're always going to be first. That's the moment, right?
Yeah.
That should have been what Tony said to him. He says, that's what I need you to do all the way through it.
For this guy who's really good at manipulating people and controlling people and like the conductor using her to get the other passengers to safety, like he's thought this through. Yeah. So to have such a fiery personality along with that, it feels contradictory.
It does, but it also plays to what Turturro's character is doing with Garber as well, is Turturro saying, you need to push his buttons.
Mm-hmm.
You need to make him lose control. So it fed that part of the story, but again, and I'm sorry, Tony, but you didn't direct Travolta as well as you directed the rest of the cast. Or you let him get away with more than you should have.
Yeah, then that's probably comes the territory with somebody like Travolta.
Yeah.
How do you keep reins on him, and he probably did better than most.
Well, you can tell that he did because there are those restrained moments that work really well, like the one I've mentioned and the one in the trailer there that if you're listening, you can tell which one moment it is. It's pretty clear that there's that just right moment, and we were talking about it during the trailer, is if you watch Travolta's face, about 20 minutes in, you start to see it in him. You can see like there's this moment of just cruelty, right? And you can tell that he's a cruel man. And I liked that. And I'm like, oh, that's really good. But then you didn't get to see it again.
No.
Right? And that's the issue with the movie and his performance.
Yeah, I think the consistency of continuity with character and as well as just physical continuity of the film is really lacking. So whoever was keeping an eye on continuity wasn't very good at their job.
No, they weren't. Right. And it's,
I mean, it's a hard job, but
it is a hard job. And it's funny. We talk about Travolta and then I think I may have made the reference to Travolta playing Cage, playing Travolta. Right. And both of those actors have kind of become parodies of themselves. I think that Cage is doing a really good job of finding his new niche. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen the Color of Space. Color in Space is a new horror film, H.P. Lovecraft one.
Yeah, the director of Hardware.
Yeah, it's getting really great reviews. People are really loving it, so I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, it was getting the same similar buzz as what was that last
Mandy?
Mandy. Yeah, it was a similar buzz. So, yeah.
And we've talked about this. Like, I think he's found his new niche. Mm. Is these really sort of fun?
He's looking for some weird art house stuff.
Yeah, now. It allows him to sort of play with this temperament that he has now, whereas Travolta has yet to find that.
Yeah, but he's had great success over the years, so he can just coast on those paychecks, I'm sure.
Yes, the man owns a plane, he's fine.
Yes. And we wanted to talk a little bit about the music in this movie.
There's a really interesting juxtaposition between the music in these two films.
I really love that opening score in the original film. Like, just that heavy bass, it really sets a tone immediately.
It does.
It's so good.
The music in the original, it's very 70s, mm-hmm. but it works so well because every time you hear the music, it's setting something up. Like, it's giving you the mood of the scene. Mm-hmm. And it works so, so well. And modern scores don't do that as much anymore.
Even the end credits, it's sort of almost a romanticized version of that opening heaviness of that music at the beginning.
Yeah, it just lightens it up, but just enough to sort of make you think we've gotten through this mm-hmm. and things are getting better again. Mm-hmm. Right? Whereas the remake, it's especially that late 90s, early 2000s trope of inserting current popular rock songs into sort of bump up the energy level instead, mm-hmm. instead of sort of setting the mood of the story. And while I enjoy that music, sometimes I really do want to score.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, anything else you want to bring up here? That music was something I wanted to at least get a little note on because it's good. I mean, the stuff that they did in the remake is fine, but it feels a little more normal action movie stuff.
It does. It feels very much more action movie. Even a little touch base really quickly on that moment from when they pick up the money to when it gets to the train, because that's very similar in both movies, but boy, do they ever action it up in the remake.
Oh, God. It's like, okay, yeah, there's some of the guide bikes take a dive, and you need to be careful. That's what the guide bikes are for, to stop the traffic or whatnot, and there's some near misses. It happens in both movies.
Yeah.
But when they make the crash, they had to really make it a bigger spectacle. It's like they didn't just crash.
Those cops would be dead.
Yes.
they would not have gotten pulled out like they were.
Yeah, they went right over a bridge.
Yes. Yeah, no, it was bad. It was just a little bit too much. But again, that late 90s, early 2000s sort of trope, you need the big car crash.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, it's there in the original movies, there to create tension. They're just under the wire anyway, and that's when you get Mr. Blue that makes that concession of like, well, what if we get it here to the mouth of instead of to the train in that time?
Yes.
Well, is that acceptable?
Well, it's there, and they play, and that's actually one thing they change in the remake that I really liked, is Garber gets caught in the lie, because they both lie. In both movies, the Garber lies and says the money there when it's not, right? But Garber in the remake gets caught.
Yes.
Because of the cameras.
Yeah, there's no way in the original movie for them to know.
Yeah.
There is a way.
Yeah. And I liked that change.
Yeah.
Right? That's one of the better changes. There are some other changes that work really well, some that don't so well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's one of the ones I'm like, yeah, that was slick. That was smart, using the change in the world to change the story a little bit.
Yeah, and that lie gets somebody killed, and that's going to weigh on Garber.
Yes.
Yeah.
And there's that moment there where that guy makes the sacrifice. He's like, no, you're not killing that mother.
Oh, yeah. Well, then I think he was going to go for the kid.
Yeah, and he's like, no, you're not doing that. And sacrifice is incredibly powerful. It's probably the most powerful moment in the whole film is this.
And that was a vet as well, so it was a war vet.
Yeah, and he just makes that decision. It's like, no, you know what? I am prepared to do this for somebody else. And it's really touching and poignant because people are really selfish. Yeah. And
it was a good moment for this guy who was an airborne. He'd made sacrifices for his country over and over and over again and the people in it. And they do give you a hint that maybe he's haunted or has fallen rough times since coming back from his war. Whatever war it was. And this gives him a defining moment. This is what he's trained to do, and he falls right into it.
Yeah, and it's beautiful and wonderful, and it's really, it works really well in context with the scene. Because you don't really, surprisingly, at least I didn't see it coming. until he stood up, and then I'm, oh yeah, he's gonna do it. Yeah. And that was like, for me, that was probably the best moment in the whole film.
It was a good setup, but once it's done, but it's wasted. And then you never,
and that's the problem, is it is a little bit wasted.
It's never recognized again, and that's unfortunate, because it does kind of diminish its impact.
Yeah, and it's because there was, again, one of those missed opportunity moments where it could have come back to something else to sort of reiterate that people can be good people.
Yeah, I do have to admit that they do make more people find that heroic need somewhere buried deep within them. Some of them don't find it, but flawed individuals like the mayor and Garber and this airborne guy, the veteran,
and even,
all managed to dig deep and find the heroic moments.
Yeah, and even the guy with the laptop, as cheesy and wedged in as it was, it made him assess his priorities as well. Right? And that's, especially considering he almost got shot.
Yeah. Yeah, there were some moments where I kind of enjoyed it. It's like, well, do you love me? I'm like, hey, give me a break here. I'm having kind of a fucked up day.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was probably one of the most humorous moments in the film. But,
and as a teenager, you're not sure, if that's the way you feel. Yeah. Like, it is a teen romance, and sometimes they're serious, sometimes they're not. But it was a come-to-Jesus moment for him.
Yeah, and he had his moment.
Yeah. Anything else you want to bring up with these movies?
Oh, I think we've covered it. I think we've done a good job of covering it, considering they're almost 2 hours long, 2 hours long each.
Very similar, but still watch very differently.
They do watch very differently. They're paced very differently.
Yeah,
the performances in both are good overall.
Yeah,
you can't go wrong with either of these movies, to be honest. Yeah. Right, but watch them for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. There's something just, the original film comes off a little bit classier. I like how they break the tension with some humor within the dialogue.
Yes.
Sometimes it's misplaced and inappropriate, but we do that as human beings to break tension and uncomfortable moments, just because we need to defuse a little bit from that tension.
Yeah. And some of it's just of its time, where it wouldn't have been considered inappropriate at its time, whereas it is now.
Yeah, it's 74. It was in the novel. It's pulled out in the film as well. It's the character who uses the N-word, but it was 74.
Yeah, and they mock the Japanese, and there's some misogyny.
But this guy isn't supposed to be likable.
No.
So it was used in context of building character, and very carefully so. So, and other characters take him to task for it.
Yeah, so it serves a purpose.
It does serve a purpose.
Pleasant and uncomfortable, but it works.
Yeah, and it still plays fine today.
Yeah.
Got Tarantino, who uses the N-word a lot in his movies and makes you uncomfortable for its overuse sometimes. But I don't think it was service of the time as well with the story he was trying to tell and the characters he was portraying. So if it's used in the service of character, I can get by. It does
make you uncomfortable every single time.
Yeah, exactly. It makes you uncomfortable every time you hear it. Now, we've just been trained that way, and it should. It should. And like I said, that character was supposed to be a racist, misogynist asshole.
Yeah.
And you certainly believe it.
You certainly believe it, yes. Yeah. And I mean, and I think I mentioned that Jerry Stiller really does sort of bring in some of those moments of levity. Well, I mean, because he's a comedian, right?
You got two comedians that kind of
are playing more serious roles in the end, right?
Yeah, because they're both part of the Transit Authority.
Yeah.
So Stiller kind of takes over for Garber.
Yeah.
For Matthau when he has to leave.
Yeah.
So very similar personalities, and it's kind of nice how they use that to defuse tension or whatever, or just set up like, hey, this is office whimsy sometimes. So you get to see a little bit all that back and forth earlier in the movie before things get too serious.
Yes, yeah, and they have a lot of fun with the Japanese tour group.
Oh, yeah, who are just...
Who don't understand a word of English.
No, they're nodding, and then at the end, they're like, no, we understand English perfectly. We'll let you guys do your work. It's like,
After Garber says, you can say whatever you want, they don't understand English.
Yeah, oh, yeah, some of the stuff he was saying was like, he just sneaked something really subversive in his tour.
Yeah, just for his own
amusement,
not realizing that they understood. And it's funny.
Yeah.
It is funny here, but there's also that's kind of racist. Actually, it's more than kind of racist. It is racist.
That one doesn't play well anymore.
No, it doesn't. And that's why they changed it the way they did to fit it into Garber's backstory.
But yeah, it's a much more serious moment in his backstory.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, well, that was the taking of Pelham 1, 2, 3. Yeah, this is a fun one. I always like doing action movies. If you guys enjoyed this, please leave us a 5-star rating and a short review over on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcatchers. Find us on our social media. We are at Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion the Remake on Facebook and Instagram, and invasiontheremake@gmail.com. And make sure you tell your friends and family where to find the show. They can find that on our social media. We have a new link up on our social media on Twitter and on Facebook. Have you changed it on Instagram yet?
I forgot to change Instagram, okay. But it will.
But it'll be there when you hear this. It is a new Wix site. It is invasiontheremake.wixsite.com/podcast. And it has all our links there as well to the major podcast providers. But there's plenty of more. If you don't see them listed, just find your favorite podcatcher and see if we're there. And if we're not, let us know. Maybe we'll rectify that if it's viable. Make sure you email us, invasiontheremake@gmail.com, and send us your suggestions, your corrections, your comments. Like next week, we've got a fan challenge, and you can get your fan challenges in. If we think it's something viable, we will put it on the schedule, and we'll make an episode out of it. And next week will be our fan challenge, and it's a nice, cool little 50s sci-fi monster movie. I'm looking forward to doing it. I've never seen this movie before, so it should be
interesting. I've never heard of this movie before.
To be honest, neither have I, so it's a nice obscure one. And when you see the title, it's great if you can tell us where to find it as well. Cade was kind enough to tell us, hey, yeah, it is free on YouTube, so we'll be able to find this easy enough, which is kind of nice. And after that, we're getting to our April month, and boy, do we got some stuff planned for you there.
Oh, yeah.
We've got that on all mapped out. Yeah, it's going to be great.
It's going to be batshit.
It might even be apeshit, but I can't wait to get to it. And the next few weeks are going to be awesome. You don't want to miss it, so make sure you hit that subscribe button on your favorite podcatchers. And if you're listening to us on YouTube, where we land every Thursday as opposed to every Tuesday on the podcatchers, make sure you hit subscribe and ring that bell for notifications to get your earballs on the show. But I do recommend you find us on a podcatcher if you're listening to us on YouTube, because YouTube can be problematic at times. Not all the episodes make it there or stay there. So if you want access to the entire library, make sure you find us on one of those other places. And like I said, you can just hit our Wix site and it's all there.
Yeah, and don't forget, you can't download the episodes from YouTube. You can from most podcatchers,
exactly.
Which means you can listen to us on the go.
Yeah, you can download it from our Libsyn or a lot of major podcatchers, and I think our Wix site as well. So
yes. No
excuses, and you can take us wherever you want. We've got you covered. We've got your earballs covered from all angles.
Yes, we do.
All right. Well, I think that was the taking of Pelham 1, 2, 3. I don't know if we're going to get the cash out of this one.
No, I don't think so. Somebody did, though.
Yeah, somebody did, but it wasn't the bad guys. Nope. It makes you do wonder what happened to all that money. But
I'm pretty sure it was recovered.
Yeah. What about that $300 million?
Oh, yeah.
That was a lot of nonsense for him to... He could have done that without everybody, but whatever. I still don't understand the Travolta even being there, if that was the case.
Oh, he uses... It's just like the coronavirus is causing fluctuations in the stock market.
He used it to fluctuate the stock market.
Yes, that's what he did. He was actually using it to manipulate the stock market.
Gotcha.
That was the whole subtext of what he was doing.
Gotcha. Well, that makes a little more sense to me now. Look at that. Clarity right at the end of the episode. The clouds have parted. I've been Jason.
I am always Sam.
And she continues to be Trish out in London. Hopefully she'll be back in a few weeks. Till then, we are out of here.
Safety of the passengers is the only concern of the Transit Authority.
Your vote?
Pay the $2.
$2. $2. If it was $2, I'd pay the $2, Bonnie. It's a million. It's a one with six zeros. Now tell me, is it coming out of your pocket?
Come on, Sid. Will you save the poor mouth for later? How do you vote?
I'm not through discussing it yet.
Yes, you are. Now vote.
My concern is with the taxpayers. I mean, somebody's orderly. You know what I always say. Millions for defense, but not 1 cent for tribute. Isn't that what I always say?
Uh-huh. So that's a no. All right, Al. You've heard from the three wise men. Now, what do you say?
What are they going to say, Warren?
They who?
Who? Everybody. The press, the man on the street.
He means the voters.
You know what they're going to say. The Times is going to support you. The News is going to knock you. The Post will take both sides at the same time. The rich will support you. Likewise, the blacks and the Puerto Ricans won't give a shit. So come on, Al. Quit stalling.
You stop bullying everybody, Warren. This is supposed to be a democracy.
Why is that, for Christ's sake? We're trying to run a city, not a goddamn democracy. Al, quit farting around. We've got to pay.
Jesse? Jesse, what do you say?
I know $1 million sounds like a lot of money. Yeah. But just think what you're going to get in return.
What?
18 sure votes.